The Parsha of Emor begins in an unusual way, almost before it said anything, in that the beginning of the Parsha, Perek Kaf Aleph Pasuk Aleph, Vayomer Hashem El Moshe, Emor Lakoanim B'nei Aaron V'Amarta Aleihem, which is the introduction, and of course the mitzvahs of the Kohanim, and the first mitzvah is to keep away from Tumas Meis, Lenefesh Lo Yitama Ba'amav. What's noteworthy, which catches the attention of all of the Meforshim, Rishonim and Achronim, is the double expression, or the repetition, of the verb Amira, Emor Lakoanim V'Amarta Aleihem. We are more used to the double expression of Daber, V'Amarta. That is par for the course. Daber Abnei Yisrael, V'Amarta Aleihem. And there, Meforshim give us to understand that there is a difference in nuance, a difference in connotation between the verb Dibor and Amira. Dibor may perhaps be more general and Amira more specific. As Rabbeinu Bachya says in the beginning of Chumash Vayikra, which is the first time that phrase appears, Daber Bnei Yisrael, V'Amarta Aleihem, and will continue to do so. But we have a departure from that template here with Emor Lakoanim, V'Amarta Aleihem. And we mentioned that Meforshim note this, not only do Meforshim discuss this, it is actually a discussion in the Medrash Rabbah. And the Medrash says, observes, that when it comes to Malochim, Elyonim, the higher beings, Ein Lohem Yetzahara. They don't have a Yetzahara, and therefore, Dai Lohem Ba'amira Achas. So they only need to be told once, and they're good. They're okay. Quotes the Pasuk in Daniel, B'ma'amar Kadishin She'elosa. One ma'amar for the Kadishin, the Chayos HaKodesh, and they're good to go. Tachtonim, but the lower beings, human beings, She'yesh lehem Yetzahara, they do have a Yetzahara. Halavai She'yam du b'shtei Amiros. So would that they would be okay with two Amiros. And thus does the Pasuk say, speaking to human beings, to people, Emor ve'omarta. And thus we see that the Medrash is telling us that the double expression, the two amiras, are to reinforce the message with reference to the people that it is being communicated to people. They need to be told twice. What's interesting is, as Meforshim now commenting on the Medrash, wonder, why is it that out of all the mitzvahs, I mean the 613 mitzvahs, and they're all given to tachtonim, they're all given to human beings. There have been mitzvahs presented to us before, and mitzvahs afterwards, but we never found the double expression of amira, which apparently is necessary when dealing with people. Why is it that of all the mitzvahs, the Torah chose to communicate this message in the Parsha of Emor, which deals with the Kohanim, and specifically with Tumas Meis? And when we think about it, coming into contact with the dead doesn't really seem to represent the type of Aveira that one would have a Yetzer Hara for, certainly not a natural one, and therefore if it would be about stealing or about all of those other things that people tend to have more of a struggle with, then one could understand that the Torah says in that setting, Emor v'amarta, needs to be reinforced. Why do the Kohanim need to be reinforced? Presumably, they should be like Malachim in this respect. Tell them once, and they'll listen. But interestingly, the Avnei Nezer, the Sokotchev Rebbe, himself raises a question. Malachim have no Yetzahara. So if you tell them once, they'll listen. People have a Yetzahara. So if you tell them, you have to tell them twice, and maybe then they'll listen. Ask the Avnei Nezer. I'm not sure if he had anyone specifically in mind from his congregation, but the same Yetzahara that's capable of ignoring the message once is capable of ignoring it the second time. So how does repetition here carry the day. Why is that the solution to the Yetzer Hara? And therefore says the Avnei Nezer, it's clear that when the Medrash is highlighting two amiros, two sayings, it's not merely repeating the same thing. It's not just a question of saying the same thing and then saying it again. It is two types of amira. For when one communicates a message, there is the pure issue of information, merely to impart what it is that is expected. And the question is information enough? Then it depends if the one that you are talking to has a Yetzer Hara. If he has no Yetzer Hara, he just needs to know what to do. A Malach has no Yetzer Hara. B'ma'amar Kadishin, they just need the information. They just need their instructions. There's only one type of Amira, nothing else needs to be said. When it comes to people who have a Yetzer Hara, who have struggles, so when the Torah says, Emor v'omarta, it says Amira a second time, it's because there is a second type of Amira. There's an Amira when dealing with someone who may find it difficult, who may find that they need to invest. So one, in order to inspire them to do so, the Amira needs to be coming from a place of and accompanied with understanding, empathy. It's not only an issue of information, it's an issue of encouragement. It's a second order of Amira altogether. And that may perhaps deal with the Yetzer Hara. The Kohanim, in addition to all of their special mitzvahs that they have, are also traditionally, from the time of the Tanakh, teachers. The famous pasuk in Malachi, Ki sifsei kohen yishmeru das, v'torah yavakshu mipiyu. It's the Kohen, although his job is to work in the Beis HaMikdash, but as if you make the Cheshbon, in terms of the Mishmarot that they had and the Batei Av, the average Kohen would work in the Beis HaMikdash something like 2 days a year. And that is what we would call in today's parlance seasonal employment. If that's the case, then what's he doing all the other 350-odd days of the year, or 60-odd days of the year? Ki sifsei Kohen yishmeru das, he's teaching Torah. And in fact, Moshe Rabbeinu himself alludes to this in the brachas that he gives to Shevet Levi, Levi Amar, Yeru Mishpatecha LeYaakov, V'Sarascha LeYisrael. So the Kohanim traditionally are the teachers. It's not restricted to Kohanim, but it's a natural fit. And therefore, if there's anyone who needs to be told how to teach Torah to people, it's the Kohanim. And if there's any way that is considered an effective method of telling them how to teach, it's the way that they themselves are spoken to. And therefore, the Torah, when it comes to dedicate this parsha to the Kohanim, it speaks to them with understanding, even though it's a mitzvah that's hardly a struggle for them. And the fact close family members, they're actually, it's a mutter for them to to come into contact. But nonetheless, the Torah is talking to them, I believe, in this way, because the Torah will rely on them then to talk to others in this way as they fulfill their role as teachers in Israel. And thus we find the double Amira, the two types of Amira, Amira of information, Amira of encouragement and empathy, finds its place in the Parsha of Emor El HaKohanim. At the center of Parshas Emor is a section that we are very familiar with, because it's the parsha of the Moados. Vayikra Perek Kaf Gimel goes through all of the Moadim, all of the Yomim Noroim and the Sholosh Regalim and a few other things as well. And it's the laning for Yom Tov, first day Sukkot and second day Pesach. And what's interesting is, as we know, the laning for Yom Tov, although ultimately it will be focusing on Perek Kaf Gimel, does not start in Perek Kaf Gimel. It actually starts at the end of Perek Kaf Beis. Most people, as they would describe the laning, they will call it Shoro Kesef, because it begins with the psukim of Shoro Kesef. And that is in Perek Kaf Beis, Pasuk Kaf Vav. So it actually reads the last seven or eight psukim that inaugurate the laning for Yom Tov. Vayidaber Hashem Moshe Limor Shor Kesev Oeis Ki Valeid Vashivasirim Tachas Imo, etc. and so forth. There are a number of items that are mentioned in the pasuk before we get to Perek Kaf Gimel, which is Moadei Hashem Hashetikur Sam Mikorei Kodesh, and it's very interesting because we take it for granted. And it may not occur to us to ask the question, why does the Yom Tov laning begin with these psukim? They're not about Yom Tov. They're relevant every day of the year. And one could have imagined an entirely complete Kriyas HaTorah composed purely of Perek Kaf Gimel from Moadei Hashem. Nothing would be amiss. There's plenty of psukim for 5 aliyahs, and if it falls on Shabbos, for 7 aliyahs, and even for 1 or 2 hosokos, for those who are that way inclined. There's 43 psukim in Perek Kaf Gimel. It's an interesting shaila, and the answer can't be because we've always done it that way. So why does Yom Tov Leinim begin with Shor O Kesev? But the truth of the matter is that as soon as we open up that question, we will immediately be led to another question. Because as we examine the contents of these psukim, we will find that their very location begs understanding. For some of these mitzvos are not in any way related to Parshas Emor. They're very general halachas of korbanos, for example, the opening mitzvah, which is that the animal is only kosher as a korban from 8 days. Miyom hashmini vahala yiratzeh lo korban ishe l'shem. That is true for all korbanos. If it's true for all korbanos, then it should have been found in the beginning of Vayikra, which discusses korbanos generally. And there are other mitzvahs, osove espano, lo sishchatu biyom echad, the prohibition against killing the parent and the child, of slaughtering them on the same day. That's true every day of the year. So there are certain mitzvahs in this cluster of psukim at the end of Perek Kaf Beis that seem to be somewhat out of place or delayed. Why, of all the places to speak about them, why did the Torah speak about them here? And the second wave of the question is that there are other mitzvahs in this group of psukim that are not only discussed here, which would raise the question, why did the Torah wait? But they're discussed here, and they have already been discussed in the Torah. So instead of asking, why did the Torah not talk about at the beginning of Vayikra, it happens to be that the Torah did, in which case the question will be, so why is the Torah talking about them again? The Torah speaks about a korban todo in pasuk kaftes v'chises b'chuzevach todo l'Hashem l'tzonchem tizbachu. If you bring a korban todo by yomahu yeyachel, it's got to be eaten on one day. Lo sasir menu ad boker. We know that if we've been paying attention to Chumash Vayikra from the beginning, then Parshas Tzav, it tells us that a korban todo is eaten on the one day. So here we have an issue of repetition, which of course is a more acute problem than what we would understand as not the intuitive placement of the one time the Torah tells us about that mitzvah. And there is an approach to these psukim which is to be found in the words of the Netziv, in the Hamik Dovar, which will cast them in a new light entirely. And I would submit that Yom Kippur will never be the same. And of course the first point of the Netziv is that the question becomes the answer. If our question is, Ma inyan these mitzvahs, Eitzel Moados, how do they come, what are they doing here? The answer is, each one of these mitzvahs in its own way is particularly relevant to the Moados. And thus, the Parsha of Moados does begin with these mitzvahs. It remains for us to find out how that is the case. Now, there are one or two examples which are very straightforward. When the Torah tells us in Pasuk Kafches, V'shor Oseh, Oso V'espeno, Lo Sishchatu B'yom Echad. And that's the famous, it's a Lo Sase in the Torah of Oso V'espeno, not to slaughter the parent and the child on the same day. And it's a very well-known mitzvah because there's a famous discussion as to why would it be? Is it cruelty to the mother or to the child or whatever else, it would be undue, that is to say. And should we raise the question, says the Netziv, is this not relevant every day of the year? The answer very simply is, it is. Of course it's relevant every day of the year. But whereas it's relevant every day of the year, it is prevalent around the time of the Moados, because when it comes to the Moadim, there are many, many more animals that are slaughtered than usual, and therefore there is a territorial hazard of coming into conflict with Osova Espino that applies specifically around the time of the Moadim that doesn't apply on a quote-unquote normal day. And thus, of all the places that the Torah chooses to speak about it, it speaks about it at the time when it would be most common an issue, around the time of the Moadim. And that really sets the tone for all of the other psukim. And here, if we follow the Netziv, we will see that there are one or two important principles of Parshanut that we will glean from this discussion. Interestingly, as we mentioned before, that the halacha is that a korban after 7 days, meaning from the eighth day and onwards, it's acceptable as a korban. Shivas yomim with the mother, meaning don't touch it, from the eighth day, yerotzel lo korban lashem. That is true in principle for all korbanos. The Mefarshim say, actually, that the reason why the Torah says to wait till the eighth day is in order for the animal to attain maximal kedusha and maximal readiness as a korban, it needs to have experienced a Shabbos in this world. Ad kedei kach, as far as we're concerned, Shabbos is for humans. Animals are just there. But actually, Shabbos is for the entire world. And an animal needs to go through Shabbos and thus have partaken of the kedusha of Shabbos in this world in order to be ready for a korban. And in fact, the Balei HaTosfos in Parshas Pinchas explain that this is the meaning of the nusach of the tefillah that we say every week in Musaf on Shabbos. Tikanto Shabbos, rotziso korbanoseha. You established Shabbos, rotziso korbanoseha. You desired its korbanos. What is the meaning of these words? I think perhaps on a straightforward level we would say rotziso korbanoseha means HaKadosh Baruch Hu desires the korbanos of Shabbos, referring to the Musaf, which is Uviyom HaShabbos, Shnei Chavasim Mishana, Temimim. There's something about those korbanos, apparently, more than any other korban. We don't say that about the Musaf of the Regel, or about the Musaf of Rosh Hashanah, or Yom Kippur, Ratziso Korban Aseha, only the Musaf of Shabbos. But the Tosfos explain that Ratziso Korban Aseha doesn't apply, it's not a reference to those two korbanos of the Musaf of Shabbos. Ratziso korbanoseha is a reference to all korbanos. HaKadosh Baruch Hu desires all korbanos. They're called korbanos of Shabbos because they have to go through a Shabbos in order to be ready for a korban. All korbanos are now korbanos of Shabbos. They've been Shabbos approved, Shabbos enabled, in order to become a korban. Ratziso korbanoseha that have gone through Shabbos. So that's a very interesting comment of the Balei HaTosfos, and valuable as always. To get further insight into the nusach of the tefillah that accompanies us every day and every week. What's interesting is, and perhaps not so well known, is that there is a din derabbanan that stipulates that lichatchila, one should wait a month before bringing the korban. Interesting. As if to say, as much as the Torah says it's ready from day 8, but the Rabbanon said to wait until Rosh Chodesh, that's considered lechatchila, not Rosh Chodesh, until it's a month old, and then it is entirely ready. Now, the Mishnah tells us in Maseches Parah, of course it's true that b'di'evet, that's a din lechatchila. Lechatchila, wait a month. B'di'evet, if one offered a korban that is already 8 days old or more, then it's certainly acceptable, because that's the actual din min haTorah. But the Rabbanon added this din to wait for a month. The Mishnah tells us in Maseches Parah that there are a couple of exceptions to this rule. A short list of exceptions where even lechatchila, 8 days, is fine. One doesn't need to wait a month. And amongst them are Bechor, which is a korban, firstborn, and Nedarim and Nedavos, korbanos that a person volunteers to bring. And of course, the question will be, now that we're here, ma nishtanu ha-korbonos ha-eileh? What is it about these korbonos? Every korban is kosher, really, on a Torah level from 8 days. But the Rabbanan, as a rule, said, wait a month. But you have a few korbanos where the Torah said, a select number, that, where the Rabbanan said, you don't need to wait a month, 8 days. It's good enough for the Torah, it's good enough for us. But what is the unique characteristic or the defining point of these korbanos? What separates them from the rest? Says the Netziv, as we've mentioned, on a Torah level, from 8 days, the animal is ready to be a korban. The Torah actually talks about this a couple of times with reference to specific korbanos. Twice, specifically, the Torah speaks about waiting till the eighth day. The first time is in Chumash Shemos, Parshas Mishpatim, Perek Kach Beis, Pasuk Kaches. Bechor banecha titen li. So first of all, the Torah says the Bechor of your own children, right? That's the din of the Bechor. He has to be redeemed. And then says, kein ta'aseh l'sholcho v'tzonecha. Not only the Bechor, the firstborn child of the parents, but also the Bechor of their animals, l'sholcho v'tzonecha. Shivas yomim yihyeh im imo, bayom hashmini titno li. For 7 days it can be with the mother, but then on the eighth day, it's already eligible for a korban. We see that the context that the Torah originally told us that on the eighth day it's ready is the korban bechor. It is true that all korbanos are then derived from bechor, but the Torah said it about bechor. Now, how does this affect us? We know, and we've mentioned this on a number of occasions, there is a principle that is laid down by the Taz, the Turei Zahav, Rabbi David Halevi, with regards to protective measures of Chazal. And that is, there are protective measures all over the place. One of the first directives to be given to us in Pirkei Avos is Asu Siag LaTorah, to set up protective fences around the Torah. And the rabbis proceeded to do so. There are certain things that are permissible on a Torah level, and the Rabbanon answered them. However, says the Taz, should you ever find a case where the Torah explicitly permitted something, went out of its way, so to speak, to mark something as acceptable or mutter, that in a sense is a signal to the Rabbanon to leave off, not to enact a protective measure, because the Torah has given this explicit permission. Heter hamefurash batorah. And this is the classic answer of the Taz to a question that we raised 2 weeks ago, I believe. Namely, there's so many mitzvahs that when they fall on Shabbos, they're suspended. And when the milah, the eighth day of the child, falls on Shabbos, we do the milah. Why is it not suspended? We spoke about this. We presented the answers of the Tosus and the Ran. But the Taz, and before him the Meiri, explained that milah is different. Because the halacha that milah overrides the Shabbos is a product of a drasha that is dedicated to that situation. When the Torah says, Uvayom Ashmini, Yumol Besar Alasu, Uvayom is specifically coming to say, even if it falls on Shabbos, once the Torah has told me and described and discussed this very situation of the eighth day that falls on Shabbos and says, go ahead with the Milah, so then the Rabbanan are not going to suspend it, because that would put them in out and out confrontation with what the Torah says is mutter. They can't say is usser. Things that the Torah says generally they can suspend on specific circumstances. But when the Torah spoke about that specific circumstance and said that it's permissible, it remains so. The Rabbanan didn't touch it. And this is a very widespread concept, has many, many applications, and breeds many discussions. What's fascinating about our discussion this evening is if we are saying that when the Torah marked something as mutar, the Rabbanon will not aser it, when we come to the case of the Korban, which is acceptable as far as the Torah is concerned, from day 8, the question now is that true for all Korbanos on a Torah level? Yes. Does the Torah allow it for all Korbanos? Yes. But where did the Torah state it? With regards to which Korban did the Torah write it? The answer is Bechor. And now we have a fascinating situation. Because the Rabbanon, as they're looking to enact a protective measure, however it works, whatever it's serving there, to say, wait until, better to wait till the 30th day. They did so for every Korban as a rule. An exception would be Bechor. And our question was, why should a Bechor be an exception? The answer is, because it is within the context of Bechor that the Torah says that it is acceptable from day 8. And therefore, to suspend that leniency, not leniency, that eligibility, and defer it within the case of Bechor, would be in confrontation with what the Torah said. When it comes to other Korbanos, as true as it is that in principle they are derived on a Torah level from Bechor, but the Torah never said anything about them, and therefore they remain in the category of things that the Torah hasn't spoken about explicitly and are subject to the protective measure of Chazal. So this is really a unique case, because the halacha is the same. The only thing that changed is the port that the Torah chose to speak about it, and that ultimately is treated differently, even as all the things that are derived from it are subject to the Gezeirah of Chazal. And what does this have to do with Parshas Emor? Because, says the Netziv, on that short list of exceptions that are acceptable from day 8 are also Nedarim and Nedavos. Nedarim and Nedavos, korbanos that a person elects to bring, as opposed to the ones that he has to bring. What tends to be true about them? Korbanos that one elects to bring tended to be left until he was going to the Beis HaMikdash anyway. When it comes to something like a korban chatos, or something that a korban that one has to bring, he really should bring it as soon as possible. But if it's a korban that a person volunteered to bring, so he doesn't have to bring it now, it's the middle of April, let him wait until Shavuos or Sukkot. And therefore, these korbanos tended to gravitate towards the Shalosh Regalim, towards the Moadim. And thus, says the Netziv, when the Pasuk reiterates in our Parsha, Shor o kesev o eiz, ki valei, vaya shivasim tachas imo, uviyom hashmini vahala, yeiratze lo korban ishe l'Hashem, it's acceptable from the 8th day, and we already know that. We were already told it in Chumash Shemos. Why are we being told it again? Because the context here is the Parsha of Moados, and the korban under discussion is the korban that would typically be brought along with the Moed. That's Nedarim and Nedavos. And the upshot is, Nedarim and Nedavos are also exceptional to the protective measure of Chazal, and they are also eligible lechatchila from day 8. And thus we see the Netziv is demonstrating, again with this principle of Parshanut, that everything that's mentioned in conjunction with Perek Kaf Gimel somehow is related to the Moed, and all of the lessons have that hue to them. They have that coloring to them. They are Moed Korbanos that the Torah is speaking about. And from there we come to Korban Todah, which is to be found in Pasuk Kaftes V'chises B'hu Zevach Todah L'Hashem, and the Torah says, you eat it on the first day, but not on the second day, don't leave any over. And here the question once again is, I know that. Parshas Tzav, the Torah told me all about Korban Todah. Why is it telling me again? This seems to be pure repetition of the halachas of Todah. To what end? Says the Netziv, there are two reasons why a person would bring a Korban Todah. A Korban Todah is Thanksgiving. And people are thankful in two capacities. Either for a specific occurrence, which is for us, we're more familiar with the Korban Todah in that way. Something happened to them. They had an episode. They had a story. They had a near escape. They had something happen to them. And they bring a Korban Todah. It's over a very, very specific experience. But then, of course, once in a while, a person is generally feeling thankful. Over what? Over everything. Nothing specific. And in fact, we find from Sukkim later on in the Navi that people typically used to bring a Korban Todah when they were Olah L'Regel. Because it's just one of those times of the year where looking back generally and Baruch Hashem, things are going well and you feel that you want to say thank you, so you bring a Korban Todah. Over anything specific? No. So it's very interesting because the two references, the two mentionings of Korban Todah, firstly in Parshat Tzav, and secondly in our Parsha, really are these two streams within Korban Todah. The one over a specific event, and the second over a general feeling of thanksgiving. And should you say, says the Netziv, well, does it make a difference? If it's specific or general, does it affect the halachas in any way? Answers the Netziv, no. But I might have thought that it did. Why? And in what sense? You know, what's interesting, what's striking about the Korban Todah is that, strictly speaking, it belongs to the family of Shlomim. And that we see from Parshas Tzav, because the Torah introduces Shlomim generally and then focuses on Korban Todah. It belongs to the family of Shlomim. Now, the halacha is that a Shlomim is normally eaten over a period of 2 days. Korban Todah is curtailed, only the 1 day. Why? Well, as the Sforno explains and the Netziv develops further, the reason why is because the Torah wants a person to invite others to eat with him. And the reason why, of course, is that he should tell them why he's bringing a Korban Todah. It's Pirsumei Nisa. It's the original Su'udas Hodah. And that's why the Torah says that normally you'd have 2 days to eat the Korban, but when it comes to this Korban, in principle it should be 2 days, 1 day, meaning enlist support to help you consume the Korban. And of course, in order to make doubly sure, the Korban Todah is accompanied by 40 loaves of bread, which is a lot. And therefore the Torah is gently nudging a person under threat of leaving Kodshim over to the second day to make sure that he has a lot of bread-eating guests with him, because they should all be there, and they'll say, Manishtana, Halayla Hazeh, why are we all here? And he will tell them what it is that happened to him. And therefore, the Sforno has explained that the unusual shortening of the span to eat the Korban is in order to encourage the person to tell why it is that he's bringing a Korban. Ah, so says the Netziv, if that's true, so then I can understand if you're bringing a Korban over something specific that happened, because you're just looking for people to tell about it anyway. But what if you're bringing a Korban for no particular reason? You just feel thankful generally, and there's only so far that can go in conversation. One may have understood that given that there isn't a particular episode to talk about, you don't need to have so many people there, and if that's true, then perhaps the time allotted to eat this Korban should revert to its default, which is that of a Shlomim, which should be 2 days, because you don't have that aspect of telling everyone why you're bringing the Korban. And that's why, says the Netziv, the Torah repeats the Korban Todah in this context and says it has to be consumed within 1 day, as if to say there's a chiddush here. The Moed type of Korban Todah, which is characterized by not being episode specific, and one may have thought, therefore, one can eat it like any other Korban Shlomim, also needs to be eaten over 1 day, because all Korban Todah is the same. These are fascinating insights in terms of the Parshanut of these Psukim. And Netziv goes further, because Pasuk Lamed Aleph is, in a sense, it's easy to translate and therefore hard to pin down. Pasuk Lamed Aleph says, Ushmartem mitzvosai, vasisem osam, ani Hashem. Guard my mitzvahs and do them, ani Hashem. What does that mean? I mean, beyond what it sounds like it means. But once again, Shmartem mitzvosai, the concept of shmira in mitzvahs, ushmatem mishmati, is to enact safeguard around the mitzvahs. And if we understand that we're talking within the context of the Moadim, then the Torah is telling us that when it comes to Yom Tov, you need to enact safeguards for Yom Tov, especially, that is to say, perhaps even in excess of how you normally would. And this, says the Netziv, is the way I understand, based on a tshuva of Rav Haigon, the concept of Yom Tov Sheni Shel Golius. In Chutz La'aretz, everyone keeps 2 days Yom Tov. Why? Well, we know the background, even before it became a minhag, even before we know, even when we didn't know. Because you don't know when the Kiddush HaChodesh is it the one day, is it the second day, and therefore, out of doubt, you keep 2 days. Says Netziv, we should be aware that in pure terms, there is no compelling doubt as to what the Yom Tov is, even if you don't know. And the reason is very simple. As a rule, the Adar only has 29 days. I think it happened once in about 400 years that it was 30 days. As a rule, Elul, and as a rule, the Adar before Nisan has 29 days, which means that, of course, the all-important date is Rosh Chodesh Nisan, because that leads to Pesach, and Rosh Chodesh Tishrei, which leads to Sukkot. The Torah says one is entitled to follow the Rov, and at the very least, precedent will establish a majority. As a rule, you know that after 29 days, the next day will be Rosh Chodesh. It almost always is that way. And therefore, if we were relying on the quote-unquote normal approach to doubts, we probably would have resolved it with Rove. And evidence of the fact, by the way, that we're in normal terms, we don't consider ourselves to be in doubt, is because if we did, we could never really count the Omer. Because the first day of counting the Omer is the 16th of Nisan. Now, the 16th of Nisan, you've got to start. That's got to be day one. Now, if you don't know what day is the 16th of Nisan, how are you going to count the Omer? And someone maybe should suggest, and Rishonim did discuss it, well, maybe then you should count 2 days every day if you live in Chutz La'aretz, because you don't know. As surely as you had 2 Sidarim, because you're not sure when the 15th of Nisan is, so you should start the Omer twice, because you're not sure when the day after Seder night is. How did you become instantly aware on the first day Chol HaMoed? You didn't. And it should continue that way, and there should be a double count for all of the Omer, which of course doesn't exist. And the reason why is because when it comes to a mitzvah like the Omer, so we have the approach that we normally would have with mitzvahs. Majority says, you know, the rove of precedent says that this is the 16th of Omer, and you go with it. So how did Yom Tov become different? The answer, says in Netziv, is in this pasuk in front of us. Because as a prelude to the parsha of Moados, the Torah said, take care. Take extra special care. And that results in us responding with a level of sensitivity to the possibility that it might not be the first day of Yom Tov in the way that we never would in other areas of Torah. And in Chutz La'aretz, it translated into all of the Yom Tovim, and in Eretz Yisrael, 2 days Rosh Hashanah, and we know, and still we keep. So these are truly, each one in its own way, fascinating comments of the Netziv, and all of this, of course, to end where we began. This is now why the Yom Tov Leinim begins with Shor Okesev O'Eis. These final 6 or 7 psukim, they are Yom Tov psukim. That's why they were said here, or that's why they repeated here, and the Yom Tov Leinim begins here. So the Kohen shouldn't feel bad that he missed all of the Yom Tovim entirely. Nope, he got the prelude to Yom Tov. Now, with regards to the mitzvah of Sfiras HaOmer, which of course is a very timely topic, and it's to be found in Perikav Gimel, Pasuk Tetvav, the well-known Sukkim, of course. Usfartem lachem mimocharas haShabbos. Miyom aviyachem es omat nufa. So from the day that one brings the Omer to begin to count. Sheva Shabbosos tamimos tihiyena. The Talmud tells us in Maseches Menachos and Daf Samach Vav that actually there are 2 things that one needs to do. In the words of the Gemara, mitzvah lemimne yome, it's a mitzvah to count days, mitzvah lemimne shavui, it's a mitzvah to count weeks. And that, as we know, is the halacha. What's very interesting is now the question is raised. How many mitzvahs are there? Are these 2 separate mitzvahs? Or are they 1 mitzvah with 2 parts? And actually, it's a machlokus rishonim. According to the Rambam, it's one mitzvah. One mitzvah of teriyak, and it has two branches, which sometimes is the case. The mitzvah of Avraham Avinu has four branches, and the mitzvah of Sefiras HaOmer has two, the aspect of counting the days and the aspect of counting the weeks. However, it's one of those situations where the Rambam is not content to state it because he's got to prove it, or he feels he has to prove it in order, beyond any question. And therefore, says Rambam, I will. And he adduces two aspects. Number one, says Rambam, everybody knows that before we count the Omer on any given day of the Omer, we make one bracha. Asker asa Omer. Consider, were it to be the case that the mitzvah of counting days and the mitzvah of counting weeks were two separate mitzvahs, there is no reason in the world why we would not make two separate brachas, as surely as, well, without getting into complications, but certainly for Ashkenazim, you understand that you make a bracha on the Shayad and on the Shel Rosh. They're two separate mitzvahs, which they are, and therefore each one gets its own bracha. They're obviously very similar to each other. And certainly in this case, as says Rambam, the mitzvah of days and weeks, if they were two separate mitzvahs, there would be two separate brachas. If there's one bracha before all of them, it's because it's all part of the same mitzvah. And moreover, says the Rambam, if they were two separate mitzvahs, then we would not mention where we are in the week every day. If they were really two distinct mitzvahs, then we would mention every day, we would say what day it is, and at the end of every week, we would say, and now it's been 1 week, and 2 weeks, and 3 weeks. But if it's the middle of the third week, and we say, and which means it's 2 weeks and 3 days, that means that the two are indelibly bound up with each other, because they're ultimately part of the same mitzvah, the days and the weeks, and therefore we fulfill that mitzvah in that composite form every day. But then says Rambam, and it's rare, I think, that we get a glimpse of how the Rambam learns the Gemara in that way, because the Mishnah Torah is halachas. But this is in the Sefer HaMitzvahs. When the Gemara says it's a mitzvah to count the days and a mitzvah to count the weeks, doesn't that sound like the two mitzvahs? One mitzvah to count the days and one mitzvah to count the weeks? It says Rambam now, and one of the most delicate comments that we could anticipate, had the Gemara said counting the days is a mitzvah and counting the weeks is a mitzvah, then that would have meant that counting the days is one mitzvah and counting the weeks is another mitzvah. But when it uses the mitzvah at the beginning of the phrase to say it's mitzvah to count the days and a mitzvah to count the weeks, it's telling you that part of the mitzvah is counting the days and part of the mitzvah is counting the weeks. That is a very subtle distinction. As far as the Rambam is concerned, it is the difference between one mitzvah and two mitzvahs. Now, what is the source of these two, well, for the Rambam, two branches of the mitzvah? But we mentioned others differ. Rabbeinu Yeruchim, one of the Talmidim of the Rosh, is of the opinion that these are two mitzvahs of Taryag, two separate mitzvahs. But for the Rambam, these two branches of the mitzvah, what is the source? Now, we may understand that we have the answer in front of us, because the Torah says, Tisbru Chamishim Yom, which is a reference to the days, and Sheva Shabbosos Tamimos, which is a reference to the weeks. That is not the case. We may be surprised to find out. Because the Talmud in Maseches Chagiga and Daf Yud Zayin, as it also quotes these two branches of the mitzvah, days and weeks, gives us sources. The mitzvah to count the days, says the Gemara, is derived from the words Tisperu Chamishim Yom. 50 days. Okay, why 50 and 49? That's another discussion. But that's certainly the source for counting the days. And what about the mitzvah to count the weeks? Where does that come from? Says the Talmud, you know, the mitzvah of Sefiras HaOmer is mentioned twice in the Torah. The first time in this week's Parsha, and the second time in Parshas Re'eh, where it says, Shiva Shavuos Tisbar Lach. Says the Talmud, that is the source of the mitzvah to count the weeks. Shiva Shavuos Tisbar Lach. Which is very interesting, because the Netziv in his Pirush to the Shi'iltas of Rav Achagon notes that the Gemara did not identify Sheva Shavuos Tamimos as the source for counting the weeks. And the reason why is because the difference between a Shavua and a Shabbos is that a Shavua is a concept which is a week, which is its own unit, and a Shabbos is a number of 7 days. But it is yet a number of days. It doesn't transfer to the parallel concept called a week. And that's why it's called a Shabbos, over the last day of that group of days, as opposed to Shavuot, which is a new concept entirely. And therefore the mitzvah to count the weeks does not come from Sheva Shabbosos, but rather from Shiva Shavuos. And thus, interestingly, the two branches of the mitzvah of counting the Omer are divided between Chumash Vayikra and Chumash Devarim. Okay, that's very interesting. It happens sometimes that there are aspects of the mitzvah that will yet appear in Chumash Devarim, not all at once. This is one of those times. Now, with regards to the Omer, so there's a well-known statement of the Medrash. It's the Medrash Rabbah here, but it's brought earlier on in the Yalkut in Parshas Lech Lecha. La'olam al tehe mitzvas ha'omer kala be'einecha. Don't ever take the Korban Omer lightly. Not that we were going to, but don't. Why? Shebischus Korban Omer zocha Avram v'yorash es eretz Kena'an. Because in the merit of the Korban Omer, Avram Avinu was able to receive Eretz Kanaan for him and for his children. And that's a very powerful statement, because now, through the Medrash, we're given to understand that the Korban Omer is not, quote-unquote, just another mitzvah of Taryag. It is somehow a key mitzvah in terms of life in Eretz Yisrael. We should note that the name Korban Omer is highly unusual. And the reason why is because, as a name, it doesn't seem to tell us anything about the Korban. Korbanos normally have names. A Chatos, you know what it's about. It's about what it sounds like it's about. And so is an Osham. And so is an Ola. And so is a Shlomim. Now when you have this other Korban, this new Korban, which is called the Korban Omer, but then you ask, well, what is an Omer? And the answer is, it's a measure of flour. So it doesn't sound particularly descriptive. It sounds like there isn't really anything to say about the Korban other than just how much of it there is. But what does it do and what's it about? Doesn't say. But that's the name, Korban Omer. And we should be all the more intrigued by this, because that word Omer, which apparently is eminently non-descriptive, it stays with us throughout the counting of the Omer. Every time when we would say, I'm not going to say what tonight is, but whatever, it's the 17th day of the Omer. So somehow it insinuates itself into that count. And really what we're saying is it's the 17th day from when we brought the Korban, which consisted of an Omer of flour. So that measure accompanies us, and it seems very much intrinsic to the nature of the count. All the more so when we consider that according to almost all Rishonim, Sfiras HaOmer nowadays is Drabonon. And therefore, the understanding is that the real count, so that is to say the Torah count, is linked to the Korban Omer. If you don't have the Korban Omer, then you don't have Sfiras HaOmer on a Deraisa level. For us, it's Zecher LeMikdash. So, which means the count is absolutely linked to the Korban of the Omer, but how so? We should be further distressed when we consider that the Omer, which is an amount, is actually a tenth of an Eifah. And thus, something else unusual has happened. Because this is not the only Korban which consists of a tenth of an Eifah. There are many Korbanos that consist of a tenth of an Eifah. Anytime you hear the words Vasiris HaEifah, it's the Torah describing a Korban that's a tenth of an Eifah. Isaron is a tenth of an Eifah. Which means that as a rule, when the Torah wants to talk about the measure called Asiris HaEifah, it refers to it as Asiris HaEifah. And all of a sudden here, we have the very same measure, and it's given a special name. It's called an Omer. But in fact, it is exactly the same, no more, no less, than every other Korban that consists of the very same amount, Asiris HaEifah. So why does it have this almost Yom Tov name, called an Omer? Says the Be'er Yosef, the Korban Omer ultimately is about entering into Eretz Yisrael. Kisavo el Haaretz. And entering Eretz Yisrael from the wilderness is not a simple thing. For obvious reasons. It's a transition which is traumatic. In the Midbar, B'nai Yisrael have everything laid on for them, and their focuses are entirely and overtly spiritual, exclusively. And Eretz Kena'an, Eretz Yisrael, there will be other concerns, there will be other considerations. They'll be working the land, and it will become a more, quote-unquote, natural existence. It has a danger. The danger that those things become the priority, that they become the exclusive focus, that they become ends until themselves. And therefore, as much as we speak about the possibility of living in Israel, which is obviously the ideal, and you shouldn't stay in the Midbar, but it's a challenge to do so, because it's only an ideal if we rise to that challenge, to take all of the Torah's principles and all of the Torah's values and instill them into life in Eretz Yisrael. That takes some doing. It is in order to vouchsafe that, in order to empower the Jewish people to do that, that we first had our stay of 40 years in the Midbar, however long it took until we were ready to go in. We needed to have time where there was nothing else on our minds other than inculcating and imbibing Torah values until they become part of the national consciousness, and with that we can go in to Eretz Canaan. What does this have to do with the Korban HaOmer? We mentioned that throughout the Torah, the amount called the tenth of an Efer is referred to it by that name, Asiris HaEfer. It's never called an Omer, except for here and one other place, the Man. When the Man fell in Parshas Bishalach, so they took, each one received every day Omer Lakogoles, so had an Omer per person. And how much is an Omer? The final pasuk of that Parsha is, V'ha Omer Asiris HaEfer. And when you think about it, actually, it's an amazing way to end the Parsha, because it's anticlimactic. It's a technical detail. The Parsha keeps going and the drama keeps building, and they were told to collect and not to leave over, and they left over and they didn't collect, and then the Shabbos and it wasn't Shabbos, and then they left some over and they thread some out, and then they took some and they put it in the Mishkan and they ate the man for 40 years, and it gets built up higher and higher until it gets to the final point, which is the Omer is a tenth of an Efer. That's hardly atmospherically in keeping with what's been happening in the Parsha. It sounds like a technical detail. Why does the Parsha end that way? The reason it says Ber Yosef is because the Torah here, until now, has been referring to an Omer. From this point on, be aware, the Torah is the Omer is an Asiris Efer. It's a tenth of an Efer. But now you should know. And from this point, the Torah will refer to a tenth of an Efer by that name. But should you ever find the Torah referring to that measure as an Omer, it's to bring you back here, to bring you back to the Man. And the reason why is because the Man was HaKadosh Baruch Hu's way of implanting, instilling within the Jewish people an awareness that Parnassa comes from Him. When the bread falls from heaven every day, so you have no illusions as to where your parnasa comes from. You didn't earn it. It's not kochi v'otzem yodi. You look up at the sky, you wait for it to fall. And that's a lesson for all time. Even as you go into Eretz Canaan, remember that lesson. And that's characterized by the fact that the rachis ketzirchem, and the rachis for, we're not really agricultural inclined anymore, but the notion of the first cut is the pride and joy of the one who's been working the whole year. And to bring it as a korban is a statement which should hopefully set the tone for the entire year. If it's brought as a korban, it's saying it's a recognition as to where the produce came from, and hopefully the year should be spent accordingly with that recognition, with that awareness. Because if our parnasa ultimately comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then the best of our kochos should yet be in terms of what He wants us to be doing. It's fascinating, therefore, that the Korban Omer is a perpetuation in Korban form of the Man, which fell in food form. And the Ber Yosef notes that there's a term that is used again and again with regards to the Korban Omer, and that is the word tenufa. to wave it. It's used no less than five times. In Pasuk Yud Aleph, Ve'hinifak Kohen es Omer, Merchas HaShabbos, Yinifenu HaKohen, twice in the same Pasuk. And then in Pasuk Yud Beis, Vasisem Biyom Hanifchem es HaOmer, and then in Pasuk Tetzvav, it's referred to as Omer HaTenufa. So Tenufa is constantly coming back as a motif word with regards to the Omer, to the extent that the Mishnah refers to the day of the bringing of the Omer as Yom Henef, the day of the waving. If you have no context, you don't know what that's talking about. But of course, it's the Omer that's waved. So it becomes the day of the waving. Says the Be'er Yosef, why is waving so intrinsic to the Korban HaOmer that the Pasuk goes over again and again? And Be'er Yosef says, because waving actually is the opposite vector to the falling of the man. When the man falls, so it starts at heaven and ends up at earth. The man is taking something that came from the earth and waving it up towards heaven. And that's a mission statement about how to relate to the things that grow in Eretz Yisrael and what to make of them. And what's fascinating is, in Sefer Yoshua, in Perikei, we find that the man that fell for Bnei Yisrael, they continued to eat from it until Mimachras HaPesach, until the 16th of Nisan. That's when the man stopped. And that is the day of the bringing of the Omer. In other words, we ate man actually until the kissing point where it ended as food coming down, and that is exactly the day that it took off as the Korban HaOmer itself. And, says the Be'er Yosef, with this in mind, we can understand, perhaps have a new approach, a new appreciation of the double aspect of the mitzvah, the dual aspect, whereby there's a mitzvah to count the days and to count the weeks. Now, most people, especially if you give them 49 days to work it out, they know, if you tell me how many days there are, how many weeks does that represent? But there's a mitzvah to refer to the days and refer to the weeks. Mitzvah l'mim neyome, mitzvah l'mim neshvui. Why is counting the weeks another larger cycle within the days of the Omer? If we understand that the Korban Omer is about remembering the lesson of the man and perpetuating it and getting ready to receive the Torah with that awareness, so let us remember that the man actually fell in two cycles. That is to say, there was the daily falling of the man, that's a daily occurrence, but then you had a weekly occurrence whereby there was twice as much on Friday and nothing on Shabbos, and that represents, therefore, there were two tracks within the falling of the man, the daily track and the weekly track, and that is recorded for us in the daily count and the weekly count. And, says Be'er Yosef, one or two final comments, because there's no stopping him at this point. If we understand that the Korban HaOmer is in order to remember the lesson of the man, not only daily, but also weekly, and daily there was an Omer Lagol Goles, but once a week there were two Omers, and we also remember that in the weekly count, do we see that anyway in the Korban Omer? Because the Omer is only one Omer. Says Be'er Yosef, it happens to be that we do. It's explicit in the Pasuk. For in Pasuk Yud Beis, on the day that you bring the Omer, you wave the Omer. So there's actually an animal that's brought as an accompaniment to a keves brought as an accompaniment to the Omer. Umin chaso, and there's a meal offering that accompanies that animal. What is it? Shnei esronim soles, two esronim. Now, if we know a bit about these things, and we do, a keves, a lamb, is never accompanied by more than one Isaron. Isaron, Isaron, la keves ayachad. This is the only occasion in the entire Jewish year that it's one keves, but it has a double portion for the mincha that accompanies it. Says Be'er Yosef, that corresponds to the double portion of man that fell on Friday. And thus you have the Korban Omer, which is the daily fall, and then the double-sized mincha that accompanies the keves, which is the Shabbos fall. And perhaps we may say in conclusion and suggest that this is why the Torah splits up the mitzvah of Korban Omer into two chumashim. The count of the days is in Vayikra and the count of the weeks is in Shemos. If there are two ways of saying the same thing, then what did we learn? But Chumash Devarim, as we know, Mishnah Torah, when the things are repeated in Devarim, it's Lahosif Behem Biur. It's to add to them a certain element of understanding, a depth of understanding that may not have been imparted yet. And ultimately, the weekly miracle of the man is in order to ensure that people shouldn't just shift one type of nature for the other, as if to say, in this locale, it's natural for man to fall once a day, and one can acclimatize in that way. And therefore, there was a weekly reminder that none of this is natural. Further insight into the falling of the man, further appreciation that came on Shabbos, having twice as much on Friday, and nothing on Shabbos, which of course, there is no way to account for it naturally, even within this new frame. So therefore, corresponding to the added insight that came from the weekly miracle of man, we have the added insight that comes from the counting of the weeks that accompanies the counting of the days, but that's something to be found in Chumash Devarim, whose role it is to add biur and further insight to the mitzvahs that have been mentioned earlier on in the Torah. Acharei Devarim Eile, we can well understand why the Medrash says that the Korban Omer should never be taken lightly. It's the key to life in Eretz Yisrael, because it's an orientation which allows us to view the physicality that surrounds an Eretz Yisrael, to raise it up and to use it as a base for Torah living, and not perhaps a diversion away from Torah living. And that is ultimately the formula for success in Eretz Yisrael. And these are lessons that are lessons ladoros, and that we look forward to implementing fully again b'karav b'yamim.